I have watched a lot of bad tutorial videos. Whether it be searching Instagram for throwing lessons or scrolling Google to see what kind of results you all actually get when you ask the Google robots the forever pertinent question, how do I take better photos? And let's just say, the results of those searches are, well, mixed. So when someone like Shahir comes along and tells me he is predominantly self-taught via watching videos online, I have some questions. Not to mention, I was completely drawn into the beauty of his well-designed website. So then for him to tell me he's not a full-time maker, I have some more questions. But real quick, before we get into all of that, I wanted to remind you that next week, I'm hosting our free live webinar all on the four most common Instagram photography mistakes, and yes, how to avoid them, even if you're using your cell phone. You can sign up at makersplaybook.com/Instagram-photography. I have a bunch of example time zones listed when you go to select whether you want to join on January 26th or 27th, so pop on over to makersplaybook.com/Instagram-photography to check out more details. My friends, this webinar is packed, and it is quite the undertaking any time I have hosted it, so I do only do this at most twice a year. If next week isn't a great time for you, there will be a replay for those who are signed up for the webinar, but it's only going to be live for about a week. So if you're signing up planning on the replay, just be sure to watch out for it as soon as it hits your inbox and watch it right away, okay? All right, enough housekeeping from me. I'm sure you remember the URL now. It's makersplaybook.com/Instagram-photography, you know. Just in case. Once again, this episode is made possible in part by our sponsor, Amico.
Hi, I'm Kara, content creator and Facebook wrangler for Amico Brent, bringing you ideas and support for your creative adventures every day. This week's episode is brought to you by Amico Brent. Find your favorite Amico glaze at your local distributor. Happy glazing!
All right, now on with the show. Welcome to the Maker's Playbook, the show where we talk all about what it's really like to make a living from the things you make. I'm your host, seasoned entrepreneur of 13 years, Rebecca Aikis Kara. Hey, Shahir, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Rebecca, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now it's official all of a sudden. We were chatting away and now I've started it.
I got my serious voice now.
Right? It's a chick.
Yeah.
Before I get ahead of myself, rather, how would you introduce yourself to people listening?
Yeah, I always say, like, I'm a spare time potter. I do pottery whenever I have a minute to spare.
Yep. And where are you at? And so what's full time? Where are you at in the world? Give us a little perspective.
Well, yes, I live in New Zealand. I am in a city called Dunedin, so it's in South Island at the moment. Quite a terrible day, quite cold. It's, what, 16, 17 hours more than you, something like that. So different days. It's quite bizarre.
We are currently recording the podcast in the future.
Yes, yes. I'll tell you what happens. Yeah, I spare time because I do have a full-time job. I have a daytime as a software tester. I work in a software company and I am in charge of quality control. Yes, pretty much.
Which totally made sense to me after I looked at your website. And then you explained that in email and I was like, oh, this makes sense. Because part of what kickstarted me to be like, we need to have a conversation is I came to this website and was like, oh my gosh, finally, I have found a potter who has like, no offense to other people's websites, but it is a beautifully designed
Thank
website.
You so much. I mean, I appreciate that so much because it was so much work. I, by no means, I'm a website developer, but I do have like, I guess like a keen eye for things that I like, how they look and how they work. And yeah, it's, I think it was like version 3, like the first iteration of the website was just like not very good, but it was functional. It was like working. It was selling pots and it was getting my name and contact forms and all that. It was capturing, you know, email subscribers and all the things I needed to do, but not quite the right thing. And then I did a little makeup over it and it looked better, but I still wasn't quite communicating what I wanted. And so I took like in this round, I made sure that, you know, I had a lot of thought and introspection about what I want the website to say about me and share with people that land here, a little corner of the internet.
Which, like, to be fair, I'm not capable of having version one knock that out of the park. Like, I don't know how you can possibly.
No.
It's one of those things, like, you kind of have to put yourself out in the world to figure out, oh, okay, now I've learned some things and how I want to change that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's like editing, but with an audience, kind of, because I don't know. I don't like also like the, you know, paralysis by analysis situation where it's like you're just thinking about it. And some people call it perfectionism. I don't think it's more about that. It's more like, you know, you just think about it so much that it just never gets done. Just get it out there. It's not perfect, but it works. And yeah, it's just that's what it needs to for the time being. And yeah, so now I'm really happy with it. I'm sure like in a couple of years, I'll change it again. Seems to be like the creative cycle as well, where the website is like, I like this other color now for my font and this other typography, and I just change it over and over. But yeah, so far it's great. I actually really love it. And the biggest for this round was to actually do a photo shoot with an actual professional photographer that came to my studio. And
I noticed.
Definitely. There's only so much you can do with a tripod, right? Like I have taken like, you know, like an automatic and put the camera there and shoots at me and when I'm doing things, but it's not the right, you know, feel as when somebody is behind the camera and actually like capturing moments that they think are interesting. So yeah, it has like this whole cohesion about it, the website with the photo shoot to kind of like tells a story of the pot. I just went for like the pot in the process of making rather than finished products. I have like a little gallery section for that one. It's like, hey, these are my glazes and these are the decorations that I make and that sort of thing. But throughout the website, it's just me making them, which I thought was more interesting.
It's more interesting, and it's also smart in terms of if you're going to invest in having another professional come out and create something for you, even if your style changes, even if you go from making, like, I don't know, functional dinnerware to sculpture or something. I don't know. That's not a great combination because obviously the act of sculpture is different. But you get what I'm saying. Like, if all of your professional shots are process, it's not a finished piece. So if your glazes change, your surface treatments change, like your photos are still going to work. Unless you, you know, dye your hair blonde, then that
yes.
won't work.
Yes, I don't know if I can pull that off, but maybe for the next round, for website 4.0 will be me blonde. Interesting. Yeah, no, definitely. I think it was a good story to tell. Also make the pot more of a character in the website. And, you know, like from the beginning to the end, and the photos of me throwing, photos of me wedging, and photos of me like trimming pots and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exciting.
Totally. Well, and I had a mentor once, finally, you know, I had gone through all of these website iterations myself and finally point out that websites are kind of like organisms. They're not literally living things, but they are a ever-changing, you know, it's not necessarily, okay, check, I made a website. I'm never going to have to do that again, right? Because your needs might change, your audience might change, what you're making might change, like,
what you get bored of making lunches for. I've changed so many times, like areas about like orders and bespoke orders and commissions about like that, because I've changed as well, like the years of me making, you know, the first round was like, I'll make everything, like anything you want. Just message me, I'll make all of these things. And I'm like, now I'm more like, nah, I kind of make, I love commissions and wholesale orders, particularly my favorite thing at the moment. But I am very also like specific of like, yeah, no, I don't make that. So that also changes a lot in the website as well, all the time, the wording and, you know, the communication about what it is that interests me as well. So, yeah.
Well, walk us back a little bit then. How long have you been making and how did ceramics kind of get into your life?
Right. So I was in Buenos Aires in Argentina. I'm originally from Argentina. So I was there in 2014 when I was very bored staring at the ceiling in my apartment. And, you know, I needed to do something. And it was just an interesting week or two of, like, trying to find something to do. Like, I was in this space between, should I try clay pottery? I always wanted to do, like, some wheel throwing. But then I was also, like, very interested in woodworking. But, yeah, for some reason, I just, you know, had the hunch of, like, I think I'm going to give the clay a go. And so I started going to it was a really cool workshop studio, kind of was like a space with teachers, but quite a like free roam kind of studio where there wasn't a class with someone teaching, this is what we do now, this is what we do next. It was more like, yeah, this is the wheels and here's a table. You can do hand building, you can do throwing, you can do whatever you want. You grab some clay from the corner, you widget here, you put it on the wheel. And it was really, really, there was no program at all of the class. It was just like learn at your own pace kind of. So yeah, I spent like weeks just making cylinders, and that was about, yeah, 9-10 years ago, something like that. So that was my first experience with it. Then through the years, I did more and less. I stayed in that studio for 3 or 4 years until I moved to New Zealand. And then when I moved here, I just joined a community studio. I moved to a different city. I was living in Wellington, which is another city in the north. Community studio, a really cool space as well, like lots of wheels, lots of like fellow ceramic artists that do lots of different techniques, and very interesting place to learn and absorb from other people. And obviously community studio with no teachers at all. It was just me throwing when I had the time. And then, yeah, moved back down here to Dunedin and again joined the community studio here. But luckily I started buying things to set up my studio and had an spare room in my old house. And then we relocated at the beginning of this year, took the garage. It's a double car garage. Now it's a single car garage and it's half a studio. So yeah, one of the cars lives outside, but I have a fully functioning studio and I managed to also wire my kiln. So I have everything I need inside my house, which is great.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I love it. It's just so easy to make pottery now. Like, it's just, I don't even need to go out of the house because the garage is inside. Basically, just walk in my studio and just do pots whenever I have the time.
The weather won't even stop you. If it's raining, it doesn't matter. You don't have to.
Absolutely. And, you know, for someone that you have like little bits of the day to do pottery, it's kind of like an ideal situation. I have like spurts of like an hour to an hour and a half, you know, of time in the day where I just do bits. So yeah, having it just home, it's great. I don't have to go anywhere.
Because you have a little one now, right?
I have a 2-year-old little boy. Yeah.
That'll interrupt a few flow states.
Oh, yes. Yes, makes it very unpredictable, to be honest. And, you know, also got to balance it with a full-time job and also the fact that I want to spend time with my partner as well. Like, it's not like, cool, the kid is asleep. I have no work. I'm going to do pottery right now.
Like,
it's not. Yeah. So, yeah, we just had to, you know, purposely schedule little slots for creative times. I mean, she also does, as she's a digital illustrator. So we have that, you know, like when you draw, I pot. And that sort of scenarios. Yeah, it's a challenge for sure, finding the time just to keep making the pots. But yeah, so far I've been doing great. And that's why I mean spare time, because I don't have an allocated part of the day or the week that I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to do pots from here, because I don't know when I'm going to have time. Sometimes I have, you know, a few days in a row where I can, you know, go into the studio, and sometimes I might not be there for a few weeks.
Well, and what's interesting to me about that is, you know, still making the commitment to do something like hire a photographer and create a really professional website, like that's a very different perception, you know, for me just clicking around on the internet, right? That does present a much more professional experience than I'm going to throw some stuff up on Etsy when I have the time. And that works. There's nothing wrong with that. Look, like Etsy's the only place we're currently selling our pots. So no shame whatsoever. But it does, you know, it does give a kind of extra level of,
it's the handling.
Know, foresight?
Yeah. I mean, I've never went the Etsy route. I think I created an Etsy account and I just thought about it and ended up being like, nah, I kind of want my website for no apparent, like for no smart reason, just for because I wanted one. And I thought, you know, like I said, I'm not a developer, but I am, you know, savvy enough to be able to build it. And yeah, I just wanted to have one. And I just tried to make it as nice as possible. I have this thing about, like, you know, the website is the only thing that truly belongs to you on the internet. And so, like, I have very little amount of email subscribers. I think at the moment, like 75 or 80 email subscribers. But those are my people, you know, like it's like they're not going anywhere unless they, you know, for some reason, they consider me spam or something. Ended up unsubscribing. But like,
your mom unsubscribes from
me. Yes, I know. Yeah, it's like, I don't want to see this thing. Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, and people obviously, Instagram and other places also can stop following you in the same manner, but you're tied to Instagram rules or Etsy rules and, you know, also their business versus it being your own space that you can do whatever you want with it. So yeah, I just wanted to have one. I thought finally now that I have a more serious studio practice as well, because I find that when I also made my first website, I haven't done enough pods for the website to reflect my style, my story, my art, whatever. So yeah, I had to make, you know, like seriously sit down and make and explore the glazes that I use and do color variations and try this one and try the other one. And like keep making enough volume that eventually, you know, was like, oh yeah, okay, now I'm finding my voice a little bit more. And now it makes sense to have a stylized front with, I don't have a store. So, you know, it's,
I mean, that is what a website is. It is a virtual store for people. I mean, whether you're actively selling or not, it is, I should say, a virtual storefront. So what I find fascinating about what you just said is that when I first got back into ceramics, I was like, ooh, I'm going to make this, or ooh, I'm going to make it. Ooh, ooh. Like, it was like shiny object syndrome, right? Where one day I was going into the studio and I was making bowls. The next day I thought that I was going to make a lidded vessel because, yeah, sure, after a month of time, I totally have the skills to do that. Why not? But what you've just explained was, you mentioned when you were in Buenos Aires that you were making cylinders, and it sounded to me like repetitively. And then you were just talking about being very intentional about testing out this material and finding your style. And that makes sense to me now. That makes sense to me in terms of like when I think about how I learned how to play an instrument and like practice and repetition. But to be a kind of spare time potter, as you described it, to have that perspective is unique to me. That takes, I don't know, self-control or focus, or where is that their background that we don't know about?
I don't know. I mean, I've always been a maker, if that helps. Like, I've always loved the whole idea of making things with my hands and little craft since I was, you know, in school. I've always been, you know, spending weekends doing crafts and that sort of thing. So I always had a position to like make stuff. I think with clay is the first day or two in the studio, I was just failing miserably at doing what I wanted to do. I was just going to make a cup and or a bowl, and I was just like, not happening. So it was just something in me. I was like, well, first I need to learn how the clay moves on the wheel, because something that probably people don't think about, how like actually clay moves on the wheel, like it has movement. It's not you moving the clay. And so, yeah, it was just something like, yeah, I'm just going to do cylinders. And I was just like making them, destroying them and rewedging and making them again until I made an actual cup. And interestingly enough, my first cup actually looked like a cup. It was quite nice. It was heavy and short, but it was like, you know, it wasn't wobbly or anything, because I had spent all this time doing cylinders. So that was probably how I got to that, you know, space for like, I was just going to practice for a little bit until I can get, you know, the how this moves. Yeah, in terms of the rest of like discovering, I just love to study those sort of things. I mean, I just love to see the difference in clays and difference in glazes and materials. I'm always just like trying different clay bodies and see how I can push them in different ways and what sort of thing can I do with one clay that I can't do with the other. And yeah, that's just choices, I suppose, you know, like, if you don't try enough things, you don't have enough things to choose from. Like if this is my clay and my glaze, well, yeah, your pool of choice is very limited. So yeah, the only other way is to just try other things, which is way easier now that I have film at home as well, because I don't have to drive half an hour into the studio and yeah, depend on the community kiln. But yeah.
But the balancing both choices and the intentionality, I think, is something that now that you've described it, what I was seeing on the website and the professional level that I was seeing, now all of this connects together. Because I'm like, oh, okay. Because I think what so many of us, when we first start, you know, it's for me, at least, I'm not going to put it on anybody else's story. For me, I got really excited about it. And I started doing a little bit of everything. And I was also taking community class where obviously each week you were getting a different demo, you were getting a different exercise to try out. And so I very intentionally for myself had to kind of take a step back and think back to what it was like to learn an instrument and realize, you know, I had to sit there and practice scales until I wanted to scream or sometimes yes. I was screaming. Yes. You know, practice these really boring exercises over and over and over again, because that's actually what allowed you to play, you know, Beethoven or whatever. Yeah. And so that's once that clicked in my head for ceramics, it was kind of like, okay, I'm going to just make sets now. One, because, you know, maybe somebody's going to ask me to make a set of bowls. Let me see if I can make them match. But also by making the same piece over and over and over again, I learned so much in like my skill and what I was doing wrong and how I could make it better, because you were making the same thing every time. So you could compare it more. But
yes,
yeah.
No, for me, the intentionality came also the hard way about, like I was saying at the beginning, saying yes to everything that people asked from me, and, you know, quickly realizing, oh crap, I don't actually know how to make flags. And, you know, had a commission of like 24 piece dinnerware commission. And, you know, after that, I was like, yeah, I'm not making dinnerware for the next few years. I don't enjoy making plates. Plates are my worst enemies, you know, like I didn't enjoy that.
Why are so hard?
Yes, I know. They take so much space in the kiln, and drying them is a nightmare. But, you know, I made it because I had, you know, given my word that I would make it. So, you know, for making 6 plates, I had to make like 25 of them because they kept cracking. But then I was like, you know what the smart thing to do is? Just ask people what they want. And if I don't want to make it, then I can say, sorry, but I don't really make that. But I can give you, you know, the name of some potters that I know that will be interested in doing that. And, you know, also share some of other people that I enjoy their work. And I know that they would enjoy making that as well. But yeah, I learned that, you know, politely saying no, it's okay. It doesn't ruin my reputation or anything. You know, when you start selling, I guess it's like you just want to sell pieces, but now I just rather make things and let people find the things that I make, and if they like them enough, maybe they will order something on a tangent, and then I can say, oh, I can actually make that. But also with practice, I'm more confident on knowing my skills, how far they can go, and I know that I don't throw big at the moment. I'm not really good at making big pieces, so I can say, you know what, I'm not comfortable taking that one, but yeah, sure, I can make coffee pour overs or that sort of thing that I've never made before, but I know that I can make it. So I think, yeah, probably that way. Another thing that was really interesting is what you just said about how you started with your lessons and having, you know, a demo and that sort of thing. I guess the way that I learned, which was like, come, do whatever you want, it kind of had to be self-imposed to be like, well, I have to actually learn, like that it wasn't really, well, we have this week to make a cup or this week is a bowl or that sort of thing. So I had, you know, time to focus and be like, I'm going to take a few months to make a cup. And until I did, move to the next thing and the next thing. And it was really interesting always bringing ideas to the studio and or things that I would see on YouTube or Pinterest and be like, I want to make this. But okay, you know, my teacher will be like, I reckon that you can do it this way. You know, like this seems like a 3-piece pot. Maybe do this piece first and this other piece first. And yeah, so it was, a different learning process where there was no structure. There was more like the freedom to explore and, you know, failing quickly, I suppose, which was, I think it was quite good. I always think back to that situation, and because I am sort of like a teacher, I enjoy teaching people. I love, you know, sharing what I know and seeing people learn and do things as well. And I've always thought that, you know, if I had a studio where I would teach people, it would kind of be that sort of vibe of like, yeah, it's open, come for 2 or 3 hours and make a pot and then leave and then come the next day and I'm there and I can help you and that's cool. I think it helps like flex different muscles in your creativity when you have no structure, I suppose.
I mean, sometimes it's harder, right? I think that I find myself drawn to commissions because someone's telling me what to make. I don't have to come up with like, you know, oh, okay, cool. That's what you want. I can do that. Like, rather than let me come up with my own creative idea. Ooh, that's nerve-wracking. But I love what you mentioned before about the fact that when we start to sell, then we can kind of get carried away into this, okay, let me just sell. Because it is obviously a dopamine hit to our brains when someone's like, you've made something, I like it enough, I want to give you money. But I think that what you brought up is often lost in the noise of the internet, where there is a huge benefit for you having a full-time job elsewhere to give yourself the creative freedom to just explore this medium, to explore the different clay bodies, to explore the different glazes, and not worry about, is it going to sell or not? Because in this moment of time, that's not, you know, like, your two-year-old's going to have groceries no matter what. It's all good.
Yes. yes, so it's all good. Absolutely. It's a little bit of a luxury. And it's something that I also had to come to terms with because, you know, it was this whole thing about like, I want to be a full-time person. It's really interesting. The other day I was saying to my partners, like, I think I did a 3 or 4 hour run in the studio because I had Christmas coming up and people want pieces and I had a weekend. So I was just going to crunch a bunch of chores in the studio. And I came out, I was like, who wants to be a full-time person? That's insane. I want to do this full-time. It's crazy. So it's like, I kind of enjoying my actual time allocation for it because, yeah, I don't have that pressure. I do take exciting things on because, you know, when people actually want to work with me, it's something that I actually, you know, want to make it happen. And that's probably the commissions that I take. So one thing that I wanted to tell you is that you actually gave me permission to like wholesale orders. I think I was in a few of the episodes, because it's one of those things that, you know, like I sort of thought that I liked, but I was like, you know, is it right to like them? Because it's like, you're like, no, you're losing half your revenue. But then, yeah, it's like listening to you. I can't remember exactly. It was a few episodes. You've mentioned it here and there. And I was like, yeah, man, I like this. I do like selling 100 pieces to one person. No. 1 to 100 people. So
I should stop talking about it because I don't want other potters to, you know, like, I mean, I'm probably not going to aim for a wholesale client in New Zealand anytime soon, but like American potters, I don't want it to catch on because that's my angle, right?
Yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome. I mean, no, it's not. It's actually not
terrible.
That great.
Yeah, because you don't have time. If you're working a day job, you don't necessarily have the time to commit to marketing yourself and to posting on Instagram constantly into growing the email subscribers from 70 to 700 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so
I am also very bad at all of that. It's one of my blind spots. I need to learn how to do that. I'm terrible. I love taking photos and posting them on Instagram because photography is something that I've also done forever. I'm by no means a photographer, but I like taking photos. So whenever I have a nice picture, I like posting it. But all the consistency and the discipline and feeding the algorithm to grow, I am very bad at all of that. So I am just happy that, you know, I have a place where people can discover what I do. And when they want to buy something, there's stock in the store. And if the retail works, that's great. If it doesn't, it doesn't bother me because I do have like a few wholesale things going that are really excited to me. A couple of, you know, like cafes that want to display pots in the shelves to sell and that sort of thing that I actually really, really wanted to make happen. So yeah, I always work with people that can also work with my schedule. You know, like I always say, I can make it happen potentially the 3 to 6 weeks mark, but no promises. And as long as people say that's cool, then yeah, we can work together. But yeah, it's something that you gotta process exactly what you want, because the whole thing about doing it on your spare time and not full time or even part time at this point in life, I'm just happy that I get to do it with no consequences if I don't sell, because I am not good at selling at the moment. So yeah, it's one of the things for the future, I suppose.
Well, and if there's no need to have to learn to be good at marketing or have to learn to be good at sales, I mean, I only got good at those things because I quit the other jobs and I had no other income. So I had to get good at marketing and sales, right? Yes. Like there was no other option at that point. And that's, you know, that's that's mentally one of the most difficult things for a lot of us, is when we get passionate about something, we want to go all in, and we kind of lose sight of the benefits of the uncomfortable middle ground and finding a balance of both spaces, or, you know, or realizing like that your skills and your legitimacy as a potter can be just as good, whether or not that's where the retirement plan is coming from. I was going to have to say healthcare, but I feel like you get that either way.
Yes. It's one of the things that it was difficult, like about 2 or so years ago for me to, it's one of those things that like where you want to be or you think you want to be when you are now, and they're so different. And you're like, oh, I'm never going to make it. And, you know, you have to like process all of that. You know, had I started sooner, I could have, you know, be further down the track now, and now it's too late. I'm not 20 anymore. You know, like that train of thought that is not very smart. That doesn't make any sense, but it's just what you know, when you're not happy with this current situation, I suppose it's like you just, the grass is always greener, I suppose, on the other side. But yeah, I'm still processing. There are moments where I'm like, ah, I wish I had one day. Like maybe I'll work 32 hours and not 40, and then I'll have Fridays off and I can do one studio day. And then, but then it's not really quite exactly what I want at the time. So that I'm just cruising on it and just letting pots, you know, speak for themselves. But when they come out, I think it's really interesting what you said about, not because, you know, you're not, I guess, a full-time potter or with that sort of thing. It's like, you know, a legitimate potter, or like you don't have the skills to do it. It's just like at the moment, I suppose, it's working how it is. So it's been an interesting, you know, few months for me. Last year or so, like of like, processing that and doing a little bit of, I guess, like self-therapy to be like, no, it's okay. It's okay. Just give it a couple more months and yeah, I'm happy. So that's good.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the mindset, consciousness, or recognition, or battle, depending on the day, is one of the biggest things that doesn't get talked about, maybe. And two is, even when your skills are, you know, even like for me, 12 years later, I know I can walk into any room and take a good photo. Like, I know my way around a camera. I know my way around lighting. But even still, there is still mindset junk that goes on in your head that you kind of have to go to battle against on a regular basis to be like, no, we're good. We're fine. You can, lizard brain over there can just settle down. Like, there's no saber-toothed tiger coming at me. We are fine.
Yes.
Or Instagram or whatever else is out there messing with our heads. Well, tell us a little bit about how you came also to this style, or because you were saying it's kind of been a process over the last couple of years. And I mean, for me, there was just such continuity in your web presence, in the website, like not only in the design of the website, but also in kind of the tongue-in-cheek language, in the names that you have for your glazes. Like I got to, so for the past couple of months in the community, in our online membership, we've been talking about the importance of being able to talk about your ideal client and your ideal audience. And your website is so zoned in to me in terms of, and I don't know if it feels this way for you, but like the fact that you have this clever approach to naming, which tells me a little bit about your passions and what you like in your spare time.
Yes.
But then also the aesthetics all go together. That's like, maybe I'm putting more onto it. Tell us your perspective from all of that.
I mean, I think you are spot on, because everything, the wording, I guess you are talking about all the Star Wars inspiration. I love Star Wars universe. I am not by no means the most knowledgeable in it, but it's part of my identity, I suppose. It's one of those things that ceramics is a part of me, and I guess what else is a part of me? So, you know, Star Wars was one of them, and I was like, you know, like this is really good because I have an infinite amount of things to pull from when it comes to using words and naming and talking to people about also what interests me other than pottery, and maybe form a bond with someone. I have lots of people reaching out to me on Instagram saying, I just love the names of your glaze. Not even the glaze color or the pot. I just love the name of the glaze. I'm like, thank you. I also like it. But I kind of like, that's where it ends for like the Star Wars inspirations. I don't do, you know, like, oh, this is whatever, a Stormtrooper cap or what. Actually, I do have a Stormtrooper cap, but like, I don't really do, like an actual modeling of Star Wars. It's just right. Like, you know, this color, this texture reminds me of something, makes me feel something that is related to the universe. And then I use that as also sharing another part of me. I think for styles and like what it is that I make and how it looks like, it's just, I've just made many things. It's a combination of things that I've watched on YouTube that really resonate with me. The Goldmark Gallery videos, a lot of like really good potters talking there. And I can't remember, I think it was the Mike Dodd episode. He says something about like pottery is about choices. And, you know, like a potter might say, I like this place. And I was like, no, I don't like that one. I like the other. And it's just like, I guess like a snowball effect of little tiny choices. When you are trimming, you do a little bit of a thicker foot ring or a thinner one. And it's like, no, I like the thinner one better. And then you just make these tiny decisions on one pot at a time. And then over time, once you made a couple of hundred of them, it just comes out that way from me. It's kind of automatic, the process, but there is, I suppose, an underlying intention of them. It's just the little tiny decisions of when I make the pieces. So that, I think it's just the making that sort of brought that together, which is something that I also heard somebody else, I can't remember. I like to give credit where credit is due, but you know, that those things kind of like...
I can't remember names to save my life. I can describe someone's pot to you in like perfect detail and not remember that it's... Like it could be something as obvious as like a leech, you know, like a leech pot, and I can't remember the name.
It was Kevin Kowalski. I did the workshop that he did with Kurt Hamley. He did a 3-day class of making pottery, and at the end, there was a Q&A. I can't remember the question, but something very interesting that both Kevin and Kurt say about style, and I think Kevin said something like, your style is dear, you just haven't made enough things to find it, which I thought was like, this is brilliant. This is exactly it, because it's one of those things that when you are a beginner, I suppose, you kind of want to find it, but it's not something that you just lip a rock and it's under there, that's my style right there. You got to just keep making them. And yeah, I guess like the combination of those two concepts of like make little decisions and build your style by making stuff. It's like what got me here. And the beauty of that is that it never ends. I'm hoping that in a year time, my pots will look different. And a year after that, also just keep growing and keep changing what I like and the things that I make. It's just evolved with me over time.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you brought up that Kevin quote, because the through line I was hearing as you were describing this was the necessity of repetition. You know, that you started with realizing, okay, I need to make a cylinder over and over again to be able to physically make what I'm wanting to make in a cup.
Yes.
But then also that either by accident or intentionally through all those little choices, through the repetition intrinsically is how your style actually came out. And I feel like the new tagline underlying so many of my conversations is me trying to convince hobby potters to learn production.
Yes.
Not necessarily for the act of, okay, you're going to go sell 100 mugs now, but just for the skill set, like for the craftsmanship that comes from that repetition. Yes. But
yeah. And there is also, I feel like, different approaches to production pottery and repetition. Because yes, you can have your design of mug and then you can do the same one over and over again. And you know, you can do that. I am not quite there. I like to do rounds of it, but personally, I like to do variations on the same pot. So they have proportionally similar one to another in size and, you know, the intention of the shape and that sort of thing. But they're not made, I don't use it, you know, like a pointer or anything to make them to the same size. I just, the only thing that I do is grab the same amount of clay at the beginning, whatever it is, the same size of the clay ball. I know that they're going to be roughly the same volume at the end, but in terms of form, they don't necessarily match one to another. But I do make batches of like 30 or 40 at a time, which is repetition throwing, except it's not exactly the same shape. So I guess a different approach to, for some people might consider, you know, studio practice boring because it's like, oh, I got to make the same thing over and over. But you can actually do it differently. You don't have to do what works for somebody else. And what works for me is, yeah, I like to make rounds of mugs. They're all the same size, but they're also all different, which I think is different, I suppose.
Which I think probably also informs making those little choices to go deeper and deeper on your style, because then you look at that board and go, right, you know, if you come back in the studio the next day or the next weekend, you might look at that board of pots and the first 10 you realize you don't actually like anymore. And the next, you know, Sandy Lockwood talked about this in terms of it being like sketching in clay, right? So you just, you sit down and, okay, I'm going to make mugs over and over again, but I'm going to change on every single one. I'm going to do a different rim. And then you look at all of them, you know, you look at 10 mugs with all different rims, and then you can look and say, oh, actually, I'm more drawn to a thicker rim, or I'm more drawn to this, or I'm more drawn, you know, and then, all right, great. Now that tells me something about what aesthetics I like, and go deeper the next time.
Absolutely. The only way to find your style, right? Like, it's just increase the pool of choice that you have. I think it's all about that. There's a very interesting exercise in Ben Carter's book, Mastering the Potter's Wheel, that he says something about, like, you have 10 balls of clay and you can make 10 pieces that are different. So it's, you know, cup bodies or whatever, they're the same piece but different shapes. And then you kind of choose one and then destroy the other 9 and then, you know, make 9 more of the original one that you like. So in that way, you can do both things. Like, you can flex your creative muscles by making 10 different things, and then you just keep one and then do more of the same one. So you also learn repetitive drawing, which I think is a great exercise and a great way to also learn what you like. I think he also says to sketch them before you destroy them so that you don't actually lose what you made. Take photos, I suppose, if you're not
going
to draw.
I was just going to say, I take a picture.
Yeah, I don't draw, but yeah. Yeah.
The drawing gets me nowhere because when I look at the notebook, I'm like, what the hell was that?
That's not work at all for me. But yeah, sketching on the clay, though, that's a good idea. I like that concept.
The moment that I realized I could write notes on a photo in my phone without having a different app where I could write the code for the glaze or whatever, instead of trying to keep a notebook, because obviously most instructors will tell you to have a notebook and keep track of like what glazes you used on which pots so you know what you like and as you're discovering all of this. But I could never match my sketches to the pot.
Never.
And so it was life-changing when I could write my notes.
The confusing thing is that I don't know if it's because my drawings are so bad that it can't be done with clay or because I'm not good at clay yet to make what I draw. And so I just dropped the drawing on entirely. Like, no, this is not a good starting point.
My problem is that what is in my head and what comes out of my hand are not the same thing. There's like a nerve ending that must be snapped somewhere. Because
different medium. It's a different medium.
Yes, 100%. Oh, I love that. Well, what I'm hearing, and I'm going to stay conscious of time because I know you actually have to go to work.
That's all right, yeah.
What I'm hearing, kind of, again, coming back to that repetition with your story, though, too, is just so much, I don't know, self-discipline also around. Like, it's not too often I feel like I'm guilty of going straight to Instagram for inspiration or someplace where you have, someplace like YouTube, you can get overwhelming amount of information and also not necessarily from, there's no polite way to put this, reliable sources, right? Like, there's a lot of people trying to teach pottery out there that may or may not be helpful, you know, because we all have our own bad habits. And so thinking about going onto YouTube, but intentionally listening to the Goldman tapes, or they're not called the tapes, that just made it sound like this really creepy, like, expose. You know what I mean?
Yes, but
between that and Ben Carter's book, and these are really, I don't know, proven sources to then also be self-teaching. I'm stumbling around what I'm trying to say here. For you to describe yourself as a spare time potter and yet have so much intentionality and so much self-discipline and focus, I feel like we need a different term.
Yeah, I guess it's not just about how long I make it. I think the point, I guess, that I got from what you're saying, it matters what you are trying to learn more than, like, when you go for a source of inspiration, you know, there's a point where nobody can teach you more about throwing because you need to grow your skill. Like, if you know what I mean? Like, yes, this is how the techniques for centering, this is the techniques for opening and pulling walls, but there's no way of teaching advanced moves to do all of that quicker or more efficiently if you haven't built your skills yet. So what I was doing while I was practicing the basics was just try to learn about pottery and know how to make the pottery. I think that's how you land. You just listen to these people talk about what they do, what they think it's, you know, important and attractive in a pot, and about functional wear, and about, I think I've watched video of people just throwing with now explanations about, like, just to see where do they look at the pot. I don't know. It's just little things that you kind of have to approach learning in a more holistic way than just, okay, just tell me how to do, how to pull it. Well, you know, like that. There's only so much that you can do. And I always remember my teacher in my original Buenos Aires studio trying to teach me how to tap sinter pots for trimming. And he was like, the pot comes out of the sinter, right? And then you tap it, and it comes closer to the center. And you do that enough times, and then it's centered.
Not when I do it.
And he goes like, well, that's all I can tell you. Like, you have to sit down and tap it until it goes into the center. Like, you know what I mean? That is exactly, I think that helped me learn other things as well. Because it's like, there's only so much people can show you until you actually go and do it and fail and practice until you get, now you can, you tap the pot 3-4 times and, yeah, it's centered. It's super like sick in nature kind of movement. But that's not what I was focusing on learning when I was going to the internet, I suppose. This is, you know, trying to find, I guess, words that I didn't have to communicate why I like pottery so much. And it's one of those, I guess, frustrating limitations when people don't do pottery. When you're trying to explain, but look at this. Look at this part of the glaze. Look what it's doing. And people are like, oh, yeah, it's a cool color. It's like, ah, you don't get it.
Do you go out to dinner with your partner now? And once you finish a meal, you're like picking up the plate and yes. Your partner's like, what are you doing?
Why are you
put the plate back down.
Yes. We like op shops and there's a lot of pottery in op shops. And the only thing that I go and flip pottery around to see the bottoms of them. It's an obsession that I don't know. I feel like it's a potter thing to do because it's like, we kind of look at the places where, you know, the part that you put more work onto. To see if other people care about the same thing. So the first thing I do is just like flip it around. I like to see how people trim the bottoms because trimming is what I enjoy most doing. So I'm like, oh, I wonder what else I can learn from somebody else that made it for.
That's amazing. Yep. I took a picture. Francesco and I were out to dinner at some point and we're both like, the plates are full and we're like looking and picking them up and hold them. And it's like only when potters are at dinner does.
That's amazing. I love that.
Fantastic. Oh my gosh, this hour has gone by very quickly. I don't have a good way to wrap things up. I could just keep chatting. What do you feel like? Well, actually, this is one thing I did want to talk to you about, because when you are selling your work, are you mostly selling to New Zealand or are you shipping internationally?
I'm only selling to New Zealand at the moment. I haven't figured out the international shipping yet. Not the packing, but the logistics of it. I don't have mind space for that.
The customs and all of the things. Cool. Okay, so everybody should just feel better in general that it's normal to not have that figured out. That's the point of that question.
Yes, absolutely. Don't worry if you don't ship international. You're okay.
Well, because I was imagining it's a much different reality for you in New Zealand than for someone in California to say, oh, I don't ship internationally. Well, you know, population density-wise, you've still got millions of people, so...
Yeah, New Zealand is a small space. Not a lot of people, but
there's a lot
the
of
markets
sheep.
Are different, I suppose. Yeah, a little sheep making bowls for water. Maybe another unexplored market.
Yarn bowls.
Yarn bowls. Yeah, people do like knitting.
New Zealand is on my bucket list. I know it's like probably a huge white girl stereotype, but I feel like the hype of taking a road trip in a camper van through New Zealand probably lives up to the Instagram pictures. Yeah.
It does. Literally driving on the highway is way more fun than the places you go and see because it's just so beautiful that driving around, it's just a pleasure.
Amazing. Yes. Okay. Well, we're going to have to make that happen. I'm not scared by 14-hour plane rides the way a lot of people are. It's the perk of being short.
Or a good sleeper. I sleep everywhere, so 14 hours fly by really quickly.
There you go. Perfect. Thank you so much for making the time amidst work and baby and all of the time zones.
That is all good. Thank you for having me. I love good pottery chat. So it's also good to have it with people that actually are not bothered by someone blabbering about pots for an hour. So that's a good change of pace.
Anytime. Before we stop, where should people come to see all of your Star Wars named, inspired but not likened?
Yes. Books? My website is kenobi.co.nz and my Instagram is @kenobiceramics.
Awesome. And I will link all of that stuff so people can click away with their muddy fingers.
Thank you so much.
I just want to repeat something Shahir just said. Just in case you were only half listening or you walked out of the room. He said, there's only so much people can show you until you actually go and do it and fail and practice until you get it. Now, that might be a weird thing to hear coming from a woman who literally sells a system on how to take better photos, but it's true. Any educator telling you otherwise, promising something different, well, frankly, they're selling you a pack of lies. I can give you the system, but things don't start improving until you practice the skills. I would wager a bet that this is true for any craft. Photography, pottery, woodworking, metalsmithing, glasswork. I don't know, pick a medium, any medium. Music, culinary arts. You get the idea. Craftsmanship in all its forms seems to be one of the few remaining things in the world that technology can't really speed up. There is very little instant gratification in these skills that we're trying to pursue. Maybe that's why we like it so much. This reminds me that I wanted to write up an episode sometime about what I think I learned about business by being a musician before any of the rest of it, of all of this, before being a photographer, before being anything. So I'm just going to leave the rest of that rambling thought for another day and awkwardly stop here and segue. So this all being said, I do believe that great teachers and educators can speed up our learning. I sure got better at centering once I had someone show me what I was doing wrong, rather than the literal year I spent by myself at a wheel not being able to manage to make a darn thing. So with that, here's your friendly reminder that next week, January 26th and 27th, I'm hosting my free live webinar, The Four Most Common Instagram Photography Mistakes and How to Avoid Them. Yes, this does work with your cell phone also. Sign up to save your spot at makersplaybook.com/Instagram-photography. This webinar, like I said at the very beginning, is a big undertaking. So at most, I host it twice a year. I have no idea when the second time is going to be at this moment. Maybe, probably sometime in August, so it's in the hands of people before all of the holiday craziness. But if you want to kickstart 2023 right now with better photos faster, yes, you'll still have to practice, but I'm going to give you 4 quick, tangible, easy to implement fixes to guide that practice and get you off to the right start. Well, then be sure to come join me. One more time, you're going to sign up over at makersplaybook.com/Instagram-photography. Or of course, you can just click the link in the show notes. And if you're listening to this after January 26th or 27th, don't worry. You can still pop your email into the form at makersplaybook.com/newsletter to get on our free monthly photo tips email list that happens all year long. And while next week is typically when that monthly newsletter goes out, since I'm hosting the webinar and there's a lot going on with that, we're gonna skip this month because there's way more happening in that webinar than I could pack into 1 month's email anyways. And we'll be back to our regular scheduled tips starting again in February. A big thanks to Amico for sponsoring the Makers Playbook podcast and helping to make this episode possible.
Hi, I'm Kara, content creator and Facebook wrangler for Amico Brent, bringing you ideas and support for your creative adventures every day. This week's episode is brought to you by Amico Brent. Find your favorite Amico glaze at your local distributor. Happy glazing!
Additionally, audio post-production of this podcast is made possible by help from Christy Cottavan with promotional material assistance from Queenie Malachi. The Makers Playbook podcast is recorded on the original homelands of the Potawatomi, Ho-Chunk, and Menominee people, where the people of Wisconsin's Sovereign, Anishinaabe, Ho-Chunk, Menominee, Oneida, and Mohican nations remain present. Until next time, my friends, go get back to making your dreams a reality. Because together, We've got this.